Welcome to Family Guidons, the podcast created by military spouses for military families.
We're the ones holding down the home front during deployments, state activations, and everything in between.
Here we have an honest conversation about the realities of military life, the highs, the hard moments, and the strength it takes to keep moving forward.
Whether you're new to the military community or a seasoned spouse who's seen it all,
Family Guidons is your place for connection, support, and real conversations.
Because no one understands life like the ones who've been living it beside them.
This is Family Guidons. Fall in.
Welcome back to Family Guidons. I'm Kathy Bridgers, a military wife of 28 years and a military mother of 8 years. I have two adult children, Austin and Bailey, and Bailey's a physical therapist.
And I'm Michelle Matheny. I'm a military spouse of 14 years. I am a mom to three young girls, a small business owner, a volunteer with the Soldier and Family Readiness Groups, and a huge supporter of our military.
Hi, and I'm Charlotte Stillwell. I am a military spouse of almost 31 years. I am a Blue Star mom of a son who is currently serving on active duty. And I'm also a Gold Star child. My father was killed in Vietnam when I was just a baby. And we'd like to welcome you back to today's episode. A lot has happened since we were last in the studio, and we just felt like it was important for us to pause our previously announced topic just for a few weeks and go over and to discuss some of the things that are happening in our lives. There's no doubt that we are living in some unsettling times at home and across the globe. And while our service members are prepared and well-trained for their mission at hand, as family members, you know, there's no real good way to prepare for the uncertainty that comes along with their call to serve. Today's episode is titled, Holding It Together at Home, Coping with Deployment Stress and Anxiety.
So we're here to just remind you that you're not alone in what you're facing and the challenges that you're facing right now, especially if you have a loved one that's deployed. I've sent my husband off to 9 combat missions, and so I understand how it is to try to keep that emotional stress from bleeding over onto your kids as you're trying to take on the responsibility of mom and dad and also trying to figure out how to run the household by yourself. I also understand what it feels like to send off your adult child. I just sent mine off to his first combat mission in support of Epic Fury, and the feeling of helplessness and fear is it's a different feeling than sending off your spouse. It's just as hard, but in a different way. But with the right support and the right tools and a lot of prayer, you can get through this. And that's why we're here today, to get some good tools and tips.
Absolutely. So we have all done this in various forms over the years, but although we get through it, that doesn't mean we are experts by any means. So we have brought in an expert today, and we are really excited to have Lisa Mustard here with us. Lisa is a licensed marriage and family therapist, and she's the psychological health program manager for the South Carolina Military Department. So she's going to talk to us about practical coping tools, parenting support, emotional health resources, and just kind of how to navigate the uncertainty of the times when your service member is away. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be a part of supporting our South Carolina military. So thank you, ladies.
And we also, as we talked about this, you know, recognize that this is a huge topic that we wanted to devote the time to that it deserves. So we're going to go ahead and plan to break this up into 2 episodes. So we'll get started today, and then we'll finish up in our next episode. So if you're tuning in today, please make sure you listen for that next one as well. So I think one of the biggest things in my mind to start with is just trying to help people understand, who maybe aren't familiar or who haven't done it yet, understand the stress that comes with a deployment. Sometimes you know way in advance. Sometimes you get, you know, 24 or 48 hours notice. So I also think there's a lot of emotional whiplash that happens in those first weeks or month when they're gone. So what do you feel like some of the most common feelings that spouses or family members experience that you hear about, you know, during that initial time?
Oh, I think it runs the gamut of, you know, sadness and maybe anger and already grieving that they have are leaving, not knowing what's to come, fear of the unknown. There's no right or wrong, I think, feelings to have about it, because it's going to be different for every person and every family is going to handle it differently from what I've experienced. But the emotional whiplash, I think that's a great term. And what that really, I think, means is there's a mix of, you know, relief and an exhaustion and then an unexpected emotional drop. Because as you're getting ready for the soldier or service member to deploy, you're going through all these, you're getting ready. You're doing all the things. You're staying busy. You're distracting yourself. Then they go. So you're relief. And then you realize you're so exhausted from getting everything ready. And then eventually you kind of drop from that. So, and I think a lot of people don't expect that. They don't expect that drop. And that's where maybe you're at home one day and your service member is gone and your kids are in school, or you're at work and you're just like, huh, why do I feel like this? So I think there's a lot of that happens for people.
Yeah, I definitely remember that from when Bill left, you know, a few months ago, that you get to the point and people are kind of like, oh, are you like so nervous or so sad that he's going? And you get to the point kind of where you're like, I'm just ready for it. Like, we've done all the things. I'm tired of talking about it. I just want it to start so that it can be over. But then once they're gone, it's like that initial sadness that you have to process through. And having kids makes it so much different, seeing how they process it. Right. I have 3 kids and they are very different. And they have processed it very differently. You know, some of the normal reactions that you expect of the sadness. And then from one, it was kind of like a, I don't want to say indifference, but like a head in the sand, right? Like, we're not even going to talk about the fact that he's gone. Like, there are no tears. There's no anything. Like, she doesn't understand what everybody else is so upset about, because she's just living life like nothing is happening. Yeah. And then it took her a couple of months, honestly, to like say for the first time, I miss Daddy. Like, I'm sad about this. And so I'm like, everybody processes it differently.
Absolutely.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
I remember once when my husband left and then came back because of weather. And so we'd gone through the whole, like, process of building up to him leaving. And then, you know, the tears and him leaving. And then the call that he's coming back. I almost told him to go to a hotel because of the devastation. Like, the kids were excited he came back. But I thought, oh, my gosh, we have to go through this, you know, separation, withdrawal thing all over again. So, I mean, it's such a mix of emotions.
I'm curious what you see. Like, how do you think those feelings show up differently for kids versus spouses versus parents of a soldier?
You know, so many different emotions. I like your example of how one of your kids, you know, it took her, she just put her head in the sand, and maybe your other kids are talking about it or want to talk about it, or they're up and down. It's going to be the same. It's going to be across the spectrum of ways that people cope with it. You know, a lot of the times families get into go mode, and they're so busy just trying to get through the day and make the next meal, or, you know, get to the job, or even go to sleep, or get to the gym, all the different things, that you're just kind of holding it together. And you might be feeling lonely, you might be feeling tired, emotional fatigue, and that's going to show up differently for different people. The way that they, you know, process those emotions is going to look different. So there's no right or wrong way, I think, to happen. It's just, what is that going to look like? Especially if you're dealing with kids, and I know we'll get into this more later, but knowing your kids and seeing where the behavior change might be is really important. I mean, I just want to say that it's normal, I think, for spouses who are left behind to feel like they have to hold it all together. I mean, I think it's so common, and that's usually when I get a phone call from a spouse saying, I've just been trying to hold it all together, and I'm seeing my kids just, oh, and I'm just, there's so much going on, and we were doing great up until, you know, the news last weekend when Operation Epic Fury kicked in, and now we don't know what to think. I've been getting a lot of those kinds of calls, so, but I think that's normal, and that's fear, that's worry, and it's okay. And you, that's when you really want to lean in on your support systems, I think.
I also feel like the, you know, the holding it all together, or they look at other spouses maybe who seem like they have it all together. And I do best personally, like when I stay busy. Mm-hmm. So I am very involved in a lot of different things because that keeps me from having too much time to wallow or to think about, you know, how I feel about different things. And so I will have other spouses that say, like, I don't even know how you're doing all this when your husband is gone. But I'm like, that's my coping mechanism, right? Like, not everybody is like that. So although I always tell people, I'm like, although it seems like I'm just, you know, firing on all cylinders, I'm like, that's how I get through the day. Right. It's not because it's easy. It's just because, like, that's the easiest way for me to keep going. And that's not everybody's experience. Right. Like you said, there's no right or wrong way. Some people need the downtime. Some people need the quiet. Some people would go crazy in the quiet, and they just need to keep going. So,
And needing the quiet speaks to me. I would do all the things I needed to do in the public with the children to get things done. But I knew when that edge kicked in, I needed to retreat to my own house, and I needed just to stay put. I need and I thrive on quiet time. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it. I think it has to do with finding what works best for you.
I'm kind of a combination of both of you. Like, I like to have a certain amount of activities planned so that we can stay busy, because if I have too much downtime, then those, I get on that mouse wheel that's not good, that, you know, what ifs and all that kind of stuff. But I also need that quiet time, because for me, prayer and getting into scripture is, or listening to like a Christian meditation app, is what gives me my breath back. I feel like it allows me to breathe again. So I'm kind of like busy, but then I have to have that quiet time too.
So Lisa, you mentioned just a minute ago, you're getting calls from family members who hear the news. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that 24-hour, never-ending news cycle and social media and the role it plays on family member stress?
Yes. Gosh. My husband and I were just talking about how we have access to information 24/7, 365. And now it's not just access to information. It's anybody and everyone can put it out there and have an opinion. And if you don't know how to moderate your viewing or your scrolling, you can go down the rabbit hole and you can come out on the other side, you know, really shaken. So I always recommend to have a schedule when it comes to checking the news, especially right now. You know, maybe however your personality is, I don't like to check it first thing in the morning because I like to ease into my day. But if that's who you are and you really need to, then do that. But maybe get up, if you have little ones, you maybe get up a little bit earlier than you normally would so you can kind of get that itch scratched so you're not bringing that into your morning routine with your children. But have a time limit. Give yourself 15 minutes. Go to trusted sites. Stay on trusted sites. Know that sometimes information is presented to us to get us to feel a certain way. So we want to really be discerning and rational about what information we're taking in, know where that information's coming from. So set a time limit. Maybe, you know, in the beginning, you have to kind of maybe check it more often, but really work to kind of wean yourself down to once or twice a day. I know that's really hard. I mean, when I'm bored or I'm waiting on something, it's easy just to pull out your phone and scroll and see what's on social media. Really, I promise you, you're not doing yourself a favor by just checking. I need to know. It's going to up your stress response. It's going to up if you're prone to anxiety. It's just going to kind of tap into that. But it's also a dopamine hit. You know, we also have to recognize that we do get a little bit of feel good by having information or kind of like, you know, settling your nerves a little bit. So I would recommend, I love what you shared about listening to music or scripture or reading, you know, something that is going to bring you down. And it's okay not to check the news and to not check social media. It's okay to actually be bored. I'm really working hard these days to be more bored because I think my creativity gets sucked when I'm watching or scrolling things too often, but it's okay. And, you know, there's a couple things that you can do, when it comes to social media. You can get some of those timers for your app, for an app timer if you struggle with it. You could set, you know, your own goals, write down what you want to accomplish, you know, 10 minutes today, give yourself a little reward if you have to. But I really highly recommend not being on there as often as most people seem to be these days. It's just too much, really too much.
I think one of the best things I did for myself when he left was to take those apps off of my, like, home screen. So I don't see them. So it's not like an immediate, like I'm doing something else on my phone. And then I see that little icon and I just the urge to tap it. I've toyed with the idea of taking them off my phone completely because I just feel like it's still so easy to go find it when I'm feeling kind of out of control of the situation, right? And you just want to look for something that will reassure you. But I did have one point I wanted to bring up because I know we have some listeners who are not military maybe, but curious about the military life. From my perspective, I think one of the best things you can do for a military family who has someone, you know, that's maybe deployed is to check in on them, but not in the, oh my gosh, I just saw the news. Have you heard from Bill? Is he okay?
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing that will send a spouse into a spiral faster than a comment like that. So, like, I love check-ins. I love that I have so many people in my life right now who are sending me a message just saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. Hope you're doing okay. But, like, leave it at that and have no expectations of what the response should be, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you ask a military spouse for information or to confirm that their loved one is okay, or that you tell them about something you've seen, it just stresses them out. I know I'm not the only one, right? Like, that's
definitely not the only one.
Yeah.
I've gotten the phone call, hey, did you get the news? An airplane went down? And I'm like, I mean, the first thing is like, right. You know, if I haven't heard is panic. And if I have heard, I'm already like in a panic searching to find out where it is and who it is. But then I have the person that will go, hey, how you doing today? Anything going on? And I know that they've seen the news, but they're like trying not to panic me. And I just appreciate that approach so much more checking on like my emotions, how I'm doing than, you know, have you seen, which is just not a good trigger.
No,
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 can't imagine.
Several times.
Yeah. And just that's a really good point. And something that I wanted to say maybe earlier was, you know, when a soldier deploys and it's like that initial first week or two of the family kind of getting used to the soldier being gone or their airman being gone, when as a friend of somebody who had, you know, who's a civilian who has friends who are military families, you know, everybody wants to check in with you in the beginning, but they forget about you at 6 weeks. And that's something that I notice for families as well. It's really important for friends to check in 6 weeks later, 3 months later, because that's kind of when you're in the thick of it and you almost feel a little bit forgotten about. Mm. And I've seen that with families too. Like, oh, and I think that our civilians need to know that families are caring so much. Like, you're in a deployment too. You're not just at home, hold down the fort. Like, you're dealing with a deployment of your own. So I hope civilians out there will realize that and check in, not just the first week or the second week, but 6 weeks and then 3 months and so on. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lisa, and friends, I had friends do just that. Mm-hmm. Once a month, they delivered to my front door a meal completely ready to cook, no questions asked. I didn't always know when it was going to show up. I just knew, you know, when I saw that bag on the front porch, and I don't know how they knew I was going to be home or out running around, but they somehow knew. I would come in and there would be, you know, a meal right there. It made the world of difference to me. And it once a month throughout the whole 17-month deployment, you know, not being forgotten was really what I also was feeling in that moment.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, such good friends. Mm-hmm.
So Lisa, how do we know when the normal stress that we're feeling during a deployment hasn't crossed over into something that's more serious and something that really should be addressed?
That is a great question. a lot of people want to know what's normal and then what isn't normal. And usually where I like to share with people is if you're not usually an anxious person or you don't tend to worry, but you find yourself constantly worried, constantly anxious, you're kind of jumpy, that could be a sign of a problem, you know, that you need a little bit more support. If you have a little bit of not sleeping well is going to make sense, is going to be normal. But if it's ongoing, if, you know, somehow it's like you're having a really hard time falling asleep, and in the past you slept like a baby, or maybe you're waking up really early and you're used to sleeping really soundly, that might be an issue. How are you doing in your relationships with family members, with your coworkers? Are you irritable? Are you kind of grumpy? Is it bleeding into your work environment where your boss is saying, hey, I'm noticing that you're not, you know, something going on. You're not your usual normal kind of self. I'm noticing a little bit of a change. Maybe you're feeling kind of numb or disconnected, and you're kind of in that weird space of you don't really know what you're feeling, but it doesn't feel normal. And then just basically having a hard time getting out of bed, difficulty functioning, you're not eating, maybe your hygiene's kind of, you know, tanking a little bit. That's usually, oh, and then if you are drinking more, you know, maybe that's showing up. You're finding yourself needing, instead of, you know, having a cocktail once or twice a week, just one, you find yourself having a couple glasses of wine every night or a couple of beers more than normal. You want to take a look at those types of behaviors because that could lead into more of an issue.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, just looking at my own life, I think there's a normal amount of disruption in mm-hmm. your everyday routine that, you know, that feels like it's expected. But when it crosses over into like, yeah, exactly. You have a hard time, mm-hmm. you know, getting motivated to do the stuff you have to do. Or I think for me, when I know I'm getting really stressed out, it's like that my fuse gets mm-hmm. much shorter. Like my patience with just the inconveniences of everyday life or, you know, the crazy things that kids do, you know, when I feel that getting to me more mm-hmm. than normal is like when I'm, you know, when I tell myself like, okay, I need to take a step and like figure out what I need to do for myself to get back in, you know, that mm-hmm. normal routine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, kind of along that lines, when it comes to our kids, mm-hmm. You know, because depending on age, like I said, I have some that are willing to talk about it and some that don't talk about it at all. Mm-hmm. Some that don't really understand, you know, what's going on. So what are the more subtle signs for kids mm-hmm. That, you know, they might be struggling in a more serious way, but are having a hard time expressing it maybe.
Sure. I would say this is kind of across the board for kids. If they're having a hard time sleeping, if they're having nightmares, bad dreams, that would be something you'd want to look at. If they're more clingy to you, they have a hard time detaching from you when you drop them off at school, or they don't want to go to school, that could be a sign of an issue. Maybe they're complaining about physical problems like a headache or stomach ache. You know, those kind of nondescript kids things where you're like, really, do you have a headache? You got a stomach ache? Because you can't really, you know, it's hard to know, but they're complaining of those types of symptoms. Maybe their teachers are reaching out to you and saying, you know, your child who's usually my little helper doesn't want to help, is crying in class, grades are dropping, you know, doesn't want to participate. And then just notice how your kids react to like normal everyday experiences. If they're having big or really big reactions to normal small things, you want to pay attention to that as well. Because as kids usually aren't, you know, little kids, elementary school age, they have a hard time with words, but they're definitely going to show you with their behavior. Mm-hmm. And then middle school kids, well, that's a whole other breed of children. I'm glad we're out of that. Now I'm dealing with high schoolers, but middle school is just a different beast altogether, but it's going to be similar. If they have a big friend group and they're really, you know, kind of social, maybe they're withdrawing a little bit. They don't want to be with their friends. They don't want to go and do the school activities. They don't want to participate in their sports. If they play club or school sports, they're just not into it. And they usually are really into those things. You know, you know your kid best. And I always say, if you see something or notice something that's not normal for that kid, then that's something to to talk about. Maybe not with a counselor, but address it with your child and just start, you know, pay attention to it. And you can talk about it. You say, I noticed that you haven't wanted to go to practice recently. Has something happened? Has something changed? Is something going on you want to talk about? And they might tell you, no, I'm fine, I'm good, whenever. But, you know, keep asking, keep showing up for them. That's important. So it can run the gamut again on what they're going to show.
Yeah. When my son was about 2.5, every time I would buckle him in the car seat after his dad left, he would kick me. And I was like, Bud, what's going on? And he just would kick me. So after, like, you know, the second or third time, I said, Austin, why do you keep kicking Mommy when she buckles you in the car? And he said, because you made Daddy leave.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I mean, it took my breath away. And so I just had to sit him down and go, look, this is Daddy's job, and this is what he's doing, and Mommy's upset that he's gone too. I didn't make him leave. And it, like, completely turned the situation around. He was then, like, coming to me for reassurance. I went from the bad guy to somebody that could help him. But it was as simple as me just saying, instead of scolding him over and over for doing something wrong, I just asked the simple question. He came right out and said it. And for my daughter, she didn't want to go to softball practice. Mm-hmm. And before that, she loved it. She would, like, tear up. Mm-hmm. And so we had to sit down and talk about what was going on and the extra pressure. And it helped. We backed off a little bit on the extracurricular stuff and gave her some more downtime. Mm-hmm. It really does pay just to ask the simple questions.
Yeah,
a lot of times they'll just come right out and tell you.
Yeah, that's great though. I mean, that you knew to talk to him and ask that question instead of just, you know, punish him for kicking you. I think so. We just need to talk to our kids, you know. And another thing that I noticed too is, I'll get a call from a family member and they'll just tell me how their child is anxious, and depending on how well I know the spouse, I'll say, well, tell me about your anxiety. How anxious are you feeling right now? And then, because, you know, kids are going to pick up on it. They're going to mirror us. We're their best models. And so I am, you know, if my daughter is watching this, I am the first person to know that when my anxiety goes up, my emotional reactivity goes up, I'm going to see it. It's going to be mirrored in my children. So I think it's really important that we pay attention to how we are expressing our anxiety and our emotions, because our kids are gonna go, oh, well, if Mommy does it, then okay, I can act like that too, you know? So, but that's normal. I mean, I think, you know, we're all works in progress, and so don't be too hard on yourself. If you find yourself doing that, it's fixable. It's not the end of the world.
It's very humbling though.
Yeah. It is.
Oh yes.
Yeah. They absorb everything.
Yes.
Really positive and negative. That leads us into coping and grounding strategies. And I've got a letter from one of our listeners. Desiree wrote in on her ideas. She said the biggest help was having fellow guards' wives with children get together as much as possible. We would swap out and take care of each other's kids to give each other breaks. It was just being together, having events, gatherings, shower ladies, nights out, that also helped. Having kids getting excited about putting together fun stuff for their dad to ship was also really sweet. I wholeheartedly recommend therapy, even if it's just once every 2 weeks. I think there are programs out there that aid with spouses who need it. I'm not sure if they still have the Yellow Ribbon program or not, but that was wonderful.
That's
so
great.
Good ideas from Desiree. Thank you, Desiree.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this in a past episode, but I think the community part, you know, is so, so important in a deployment. And depending on your branch or your, you know, situation, whether you're active duty or National Guard, that may be easier or harder. But, like, you got to find those people somewhere, because as wonderful as your civilian friends and family are, they just don't understand it. There is no way to understand it unless you've been through it. So I feel so blessed that our family, you know, has people that are close around us, physically close, that are in the same situation. Mm-hmm. So I've started a monthly coffee date with one of the spouses from Bill's unit. And, you know, sometimes we just talk about random stuff. Sometimes we spend a little time crying together or something. But, you know, whatever it is, I just feel so refreshed after that. Or, like, you know, being invited over for dinner at a family's house who's a National Guard family, and knowing that, like, there's no pressure in that space to try to talk about what's going on. You can just be with them and they get it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's amazing.
I saw Michelle, was it last weekend? two weekends ago at the National Guard Conference. And she was in one of the hospitality suites that we were visiting. And I just was impressed. And I hope that just being there and being with friends who have walked your shoes was very helpful for you.
It was.
It does.
It's a mixed blessing.
Yeah.
I had a nurse practitioner pop into an office. I was getting a treatment done for something, and she heard I was in the office, and her husband's deployed in the same unit with my son. And she just came in the door and looked at me, and I looked at her, and she said, I just needed to be in a room with somebody who understood. And we both just, like, teared up. Mm-hmm. But we didn't even really say that much to each other, just that, you know, love you, praying for you. And then she had to pop out and go to her next patient. But it did help, like, just make me breathe a little bit better. Yeah. Just being in the same room with somebody who just has the same heart pulse that you have.
Yeah, just settles you a little bit. Mm-hmm.
So do you have any ideas for people how they can calm themselves?
Yes.
When they don't have somebody else around?
Yes. So I have two things I want to share. And these are just great coping tools to help you no matter what the situation is. And you recognize that you need to maybe calm yourself down a little bit. And deep breathing is so helpful. And I know people kind of scoff at it, but until you actually try it, it really can work. So one of the things that is really easy, and I won't do it right now because I look kind of silly, but inhale through your nose for the count of four, and then exhale for the count of six, and repeat that 4 to 5 times, because the longer inhale really does help with the anxiety and worry response in your body. So I always recommend doing that, and then chances are you're going to feel so much better after you just have a couple deep breaths in you. Another thing, if you tend to be a little more anxious or a little more worrisome, is this, you can ground yourself. It's called 5-4-3-2-1, and maybe you've heard of this, but you can think, you want to, in the moment, to ground yourself, what are 5 things that I can see? And you want to, like, list them off. And then what are 4 things that you feel? So, you know, your shirt, your pants, your hair, you know, you want to really reach for things and actually touch them. 3 things that you hear, so pay attention to maybe the birds or water rushing or wherever you are. If you're in the car engine, 2 things you can smell. Hopefully they're pleasant. And then 1 thing that you can taste, because when you take yourself through an exercise where you have to really focus and pay attention, you'll find on the other side of that you really do feel a lot better. So once again, that's 5 things you can see, 4 things that you can feel, 3 things you hear, 2 things you smell, and 1 thing that you taste. This will bring you out of those anxious moments or anxious thoughts. It really help you stay present and grounded.
I have not done that, but the deep breathing or the mm-hmm. slow breathing, it really does make a world of difference. Like, that is my go-to when I feel that, you know, that anxiety kind of escalating, or I can feel my heart rate, you know, increasing, or I'm starting to get, you know, agitated. And as I do that, like 2 or 3 breaths in, I can literally feel my heart, like, slowing down, or like pounding, like, less, you know, less forcefully maybe, but it's crazy how quickly that
really
changes, like, mm-hmm. what's going on in your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same here. I've done the breathing one. Love it. I call it belly breathing because I make sure it comes out here, because it feels like I'm so tight here when I'm stressed, and it just kind of stretches that area. But I like the 5-4-3-2-1. I've never heard of that.
Either. Now, when you do that, do you also put your hand
on
it? I do that too.
So I can feel it go out.
Just to feel it. So I have an email about taking care of yourself during a deployment. No matter the situation, because it didn't have to be with deployments, I found surrounding myself with positive people kept my sanity. Taking care of yourself is the most important thing you can do for your family. My faith is strong, and that was and is an important part of making it through daily life for me. Keeping healthy is the other key to keeping your mental health in check. Deployments come with their own challenges, but the keys for me were and still are my faith and its practice, exercise, and friendships. I know you speak a lot, Kathy, about your faith.
I wouldn't be here without it, literally. Thank you. That was really good.
I do think that speaks kind of to, you know, the routine. So, you know, you talked about the quick, the recovery stuff, right? Like when you're really feeling the anxiety. But are there certain routines or habits that you feel like are most helpful when you're in a prolonged, mm-hmm. like stressful situation, sure. like a deployment that may mm-hmm. last for, you know, 3 months or 10 months or 12 or whatever?
Yeah, I'm a big believer and advocate for schedules. And the more scheduled you can be, the better. So consistent wake up time, consistent breakfast. If you're going to work, you know, your lunch break is important. Coming home, you know, when do you schedule time for exercise? Don't let those things slide. That's really important. Do you have a bedtime ritual that you like to do, or maybe come up with one? I don't recommend it scrolling your phone as your bedtime ritual. That is really not a good ritual. I mean, I would suggest if you have to have your phone in the room, because I know a lot of people don't like not having their phone in the room just in case, you know, maybe if you put it at a distance from your night table, I think that's really a good thing, not having it. Because if you can't sleep, what are you going to do? You're going to grab that phone. I know I keep harping on the phones and the social media, but I do think it's important that is not part of your wind down ritual. And maybe part of your wind down ritual is watching a show on your phone. That's, you know, that's totally fine, but have a stopping point that you put that up. On the weekends, if weekends are hard, try to schedule activities that are going to keep you busy. Really look for, I love how you said you have that coffee date with your other military spouse. I think that's really helpful. And if you have, you know, for your children, you want to also try to keep them as much as a schedule as you can, but also knowing your kid and knowing yourself and knowing when you need that time alone is important. But I do think being on a schedule is very, very important. Deployment or non-deployment, I think it's just a good thing for humans to have schedules, for sure.
Something predictable in an unpredictable
exactly.
time.
Yeah. Because you have so much you can't control. There's so much fear of the unknown. There's so much happening that you have no control over. And that's so unnerving for people. And this is, we used to say this many moons ago when I first started working with the Guard, like this is a new normal. Mm-hmm. The deployment is a new normal. And I've been working for the Guard since, I think, 2010. So this is, it's wild for me to, here we go again. You know, I really wasn't expecting this to be going on again. I'm sure y'all weren't expecting it either. So the new normal is here we are again. It's a new normal. And it's even a newer normal with the way things are happening right now and what's going on. So I really think it's important to recognize that things can be similar, but they're going to be different for you and for your family. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. You're going to figure this out. There's great support out there. I mean, the new normal is just new, another one.
Yeah. You make a great point about that. I mean, we've been joking since things kind of changed, mm-hmm. That, you know, when we went into this deployment, it was, you know, it was unfortunate to have the separation, but it was just, you know, a desk job on the other side of the world. Like he's doing his normal stuff. He's just doing it in a different place. And now this feels much, much different than that. And so, you know, kind of coping with that change in the reality is hard and stressful. And I think, you know, the importance of habits and the self-care there. I got a note from a friend about this topic, and Laura said, and when I asked her, you know, what do you think, or what are your thoughts on how you kept your, you know, sanity during a deployment? And she said, exercise. But she said, but honestly, just staying busy, you know, between the kids and work, she felt like she rarely had downtime. So not necessarily maybe the healthiest, but she didn't have a lot of time to process her feelings. So that just kind of helped her kept going. But she also made a good point that I think it's important to recognize that it feels very selfish as a mother, even without a deployed spouse, you know, to take the hour or hour and a half to exercise, to spend the money for the gym membership or the childcare, or, you know, if exercise is not your thing, whatever that hobby or habit is that keeps you grounded and keeps you feeling like yourself. And I think whether you're a mother or a father at home taking care of the kids, or a parent of a soldier who's taking care of grandkids, or whatever that might be, to really emphasize your self-care, because you cannot take, I mean, we've talked about how much, you know, kids and other people absorb your energy. Like, you can't take care of them if you're not taking care of yourself. And that has been, that just really resonates with me. So thank you, Laura, for that. But the last like 3 weeks, I think I would have gone absolutely crazy if I had not. I had a few days in the beginning where I kind of, you know, wallowed, and then it was like, okay, I've got to get back to my basics. And so that was getting back to the gym, starting each morning with, you know, a song, a worship song, devotional podcast that I really like, and just doing those little things so that I didn't fall into the routine of going home and sitting down and just being like an unproductive, worrying lump.
Yeah. It's a good example for the kids too, to see you do that. And it's okay to say, hey, mom needs a timeout. Like, I'm just, this is, don't mess with me right now. I'm having a little bit of a struggle, so I'm going to take a few minutes, and I'm going to just chill out, and I'll be back with you in a little bit, because it teaches them it's okay to do that for themselves when they're feeling overwhelmed. So do you have any suggestions for maintaining a healthy connection with your partner when they're overseas in the midst of all the job, kids, house, chaos, in a in a positive way?
Yes, and it's going to look different for maybe for the soldiers that are getting ready to deploy now, versus, you know, you thought he was just going over there for a desk job kind of thing. So maybe your talks were different, but before, you know, how are we going to stay connected? But I think it's important to start that conversation before they go, is, you know, I know there's a lot we don't know about how often we can talk, but here are some things that might keep us connected. You know, reading the same book together. I don't know if you can watch a series. I don't know what the internet's like over there, but watching the same series, whatever you enjoy together as a couple, how can you keep that going while the soldier is deployed, or airman is deployed? And then how, you know your spouse better than anybody. What kind of communicator are they? And do you, you know, I know how my husband likes how we communicate. And so, you know, let's talk about that. Okay, so you need, this is how you communicate, but this is what I like, and this is what I need. Mm-hmm. And you know me, and you know how I might be. So I need more than just I'm good or a thumbs up. Like, I need more than that. And, you know, talk about those things ahead of time as best as you can. And know that, I'm trying to think what else has been discussed in the past, like other families have shared that was helpful. You know, I don't know if it's possible to do it now, but I remember doing couples counseling when a soldier was deployed and the spouse was here. We somehow figured out how to get the spouse on the other, get them engaged. It was pretty, you know, one or two sessions, but it was all about, like, you know, she just felt like the communication wasn't there and she was really worried. And, you know, we talked about maybe her own insecurities of not getting the communication that she would like to receive, but you know, just things like that. If you write emails to each other, I mean, that was more prevalent. Now it's texting, but sending a picture if you can, just letting them know that you're thinking of them, things like that. Just try to remember what you have in common and try to keep those things going as best as you can. So
I found myself trying not to dump.
Yeah.
We would only talk like maybe once or twice a week, and you've got the garbage disposal is stuck. The garage door doesn't work. I ended up in the ER with, you know, my son having stitches. So I tried to not do that dump immediately, because I have to remember that they have a tremendous amount on their plate, and I honestly don't want to distract them from what they need to focus on. So I tried to pick the stuff that was important and just, you know, try to handle the rest. You can write it down and go over it with them later, but I think trying to focus on being uplifting for both of you and not trying to deal with really heavy things that you don't have to deal with them in that moment was helpful for us.
That's really good advice. I think a lot of the times we think we're connecting with our spouse by dumping on them because they want to know. But when they're in deployment status, they don't need to know.
No.
You know, they really, that's not maybe what they need to hear right then and there. So I think that's really wise, is knowing what to share and what not to share. Yeah. And you can have that conversation ahead of time too, before they go, you know, just know, okay, if this happens, if the tree falls, this is who you call. If you accidentally do something with the car, this is who you call. So you have a plan in place that you feel confident in your ability to handle things. And it's a sense of, you know, when I do things on my own that my husband would usually do, I feel pretty good. I'm like, yeah, I just did that. I'm pretty proud of myself. Mm-hmm. So it's going to grow you as a spouse as well. I'm sure y'all have stories of when your husbands came back, how you just kind of did things and moved on with life. And they were like, wait a minute, that's usually my job. Uh-huh. You know, there's all kinds of stories like that floating yes. around. Those are fun to hear.
That would be an entire episode.
A whole other episode.
In of itself.
Yeah. Back it on up.
Yeah. Yeah, just the whole episode on what military spouses have accomplished while their soldier was gone. I think that would be a good one.
And rejoining.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How to rejoin family after being gone for so long.
For sure. So I think that's a good stopping point for today. We've reached the end of our episode time, but please tune in next week to hear more about the coping with deployment anxiety and stress. We're going to talk about supporting kids through deployment, how if you are a parent of a service member to support them, and you know some other resources for coping. So we hope to see you back next week. And again, please like and share this episode with another military family. And until next time, from the Bluff Road Readiness Center to wherever you are listening.